not surprised.
Were you hiding there the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Clyde's on his way to turn the projector on. You know how to load these things on, though?
I do.
Okay.
No.
gonna be late. It's not like this.
Michelle? Be time, you want?
Nice to meet you finally too, because I've always said Michelle Nemo, I've never met her. I don't know who she would be.
That's what I'm always discovering.
We're still
late
lunch after.
What about tomorrow? I got it. What's
tomorrow? You work some tomorrow?
Is it?
Whenever they
stay. I don't have my phone for it.
No, I think I'm stationed.
I only have this one.
The city I've got handouts. So Michelle.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016, and this is the beginning of our Legislative Review Committee. At the very outset, I want to provide some housekeeping rules for our community members here. We'd ask that you keep your comments limited to 3 minutes unless recognized by the chair. And also, there are public comments, speaker slips. We welcome the public's comments on this very important issue. There are yellow slips at the entryway to the council chambers, and we encourage our public, if you would like to speak, please fill out a yellow speaker slip regarding this your particular item and hand it over to Jorge Carlos, our staff assistant here tonight, and he will then provide those to me. Also, we want to encourage certainly dialogue and conversation amongst the committee here on the road ahead. This is a very important matter for our community, and we appreciate the public's input. Let's go ahead and open, I think it's a good opportunity for us to salute our flag, would you say? So let's all stand and salute our flag. I'll ask Councilman Nickel, please, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please place your hand on your heart and repeat after me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilman. I want to immediately go into our closed session portion. If there are no closed session items to discuss, we'll move on to our open session calendar. Meeting start time is approximately 4:10 on Tuesday, May 10th. The first item on our public calendar is the discussion of medical marijuana, the study, evaluation, research, and regulation. Present here in our audience, our staff members, city staff members. I certainly appreciate those members represented, the city manager, city attorney, city clerk, and finance department, and as well as our San Bernardino Police Department regarding their particular aspects. At this time, I'll go ahead and open it for any opening statements from our respective council committee members. Starting to my left, Mr. Nickel.
Well, I just want to begin by thanking our police department and our partners in the county. This past week, we were able to finally close down an establishment called the Break Room, which had been creating quite a number of complaints. It was located directly across from a senior housing complex, and I want to thank our police department for heading up the task force that eventually led to the closure of that establishment last week. So with that, I think it shows that we can engage in control and enforcement when and if needed. Certainly, I'll be interested to find out the level of resources that were necessary to actually shut that particular establishment down. One of the challenges, or my understanding, one of the challenges regarding that particular establishment was the fact that it was located in a county pocket. And looking at the map on today's agenda, I would be interested to find out what, if anything, we're doing to monitor dispensary activity and other types of illicit activities that aren't necessarily taking place within the city limits per se, but perhaps within the county pockets and the areas immediately adjacent to our city, which are equally as relevant, certainly given the experience we had with this establishment last week. But again, I want to thank our police department. I want to thank our city attorney. I want to thank those in the city that did an excellent job ensuring that that particular location was dealt with appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Mr. Barrios.
Thank you, John. Well, despite we did do the work to get that dispensary closed, my question is, did it remain closed? And I guess we'll find out later. And if how fast these people relocate, and if that's even a reasonable solution to shutting down these dispensaries or going after them, because many people know within a week they can reopen somewhere else, and that using our resources to go out and just shut down dispensaries with no long-term plan on keeping them closed or no ordinance, no regulation, no policy, we're kind of wasting our money, I see, in my opinion. And that's why we're here today. That's why we're here to look at the different issues that we're facing, that the city's going to be dealing with, and how we're going to develop some kind of regulation or policy to put in place so that these dispensaries that are, we find, out of compliance or not within our regulation, we can legitimately shut them down and have the good people that are out there abiding by the laws, abiding by fair practice in whatever businesses that they do, they follow that. And that's why we're here today. And I know this conversation is going to take a number of meetings to get to some kind of resolution that we put in place. And I want to thank everybody here in attendance, whether you're speaking or not. This is going to impact all of us in our city. And I think the more participation in this conversation that we have, the better, whether you're listening or you're actually here to speak. So thank you, everybody, for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Barrios. I wanted to certainly recognize Mr. Nichols' comments regarding this weekend's dispensary breakthrough and appreciate our law enforcement personnel. Thank you for that impact over the weekend. There is much more work to do here. There is certainly, you've heard my concerns regarding marijuana dispensaries throughout the city. I think we'll get the actual figure from Ms. Neville later this afternoon regarding the official number, but my understanding is that it exceeds 30 dispensaries. And in defiance to the municipal code and recent legislative policies that we have crafted as a city, many of these dispensaries are defiant to our local charter and issues and really in defiant to the law here in our city. So I applaud the efforts of our local law enforcement, and we appreciate the concern for children and public safety and general well-being of our city. I have not made my mind up. I think you've read in the newspaper today, I'm still open. I think it's fair to have an open mind here, and with that, I want to encourage our committee to remain consistent in our approach, not to really take a side, but just to gather facts. I think that's the most important objective and purpose here as a committee, is to understand as much as we can, ask the tough, deep questions. This is almost a study workshop where the council is not convening, but it's a subset of the actual mayor and common council studying this issue. We'll make our final recommendations onto the mayor and common council in their full deliberations. But I think it's important for us to remain objective as a committee and to remain certainly asking these tough questions that will make impacts. And I appreciate Councilman Nichols' perspective and Councilman Barrios and the direction that I hope we will come to some conclusion here very soon. Just yesterday in the Press Enterprise, it was reported there was a nice article regarding some of the legislation. I encourage readers or our audience here to take a look at that Press Enterprise article. It was quite enlightening. My understanding is that there might be a political wave here this November, so that irrespective of what we decide here, the voters at large in the state of California may push a recreational aspect of marijuana throughout the state. In my call today with Ms. Susie Morris, a constituent from the north end of our city, had contacted me regarding her perspective. I shared with her that, in fact, we cannot build walls. If, in fact, the city of San Bernardino is to remain vibrant and on the cutting edge of quality of life improvements and enhancements to our city, we can't certainly build walls, and we're not an island unto our own. And so with that in mind, I encourage Ms. Morris, please continue to share your perspective, call, write me, email me. I did listen to her concerns regarding public safety, children, and they are valid. They are valid concerns that she has. My only position is that if the state of California and the voters provide some clear direction and a finality to this whole question, my position is, as a city, we need to certainly have a good understanding of what local municipalities are afforded and those control mechanisms and tools within our reach. So with that in mind, this is kind of, again, our workshop and study on this issue. I don't assume we'll make any final recommendations here tonight. I want to encourage you to watch the council LRC calendar, and staff will probably get me a date here for next month. We need to get the date out. So if Jorge, if you can research that, the next date, that way we can make that public and adjourn to that meeting. So with that in mind, I want to once again remind our public, if you have just come in a few minutes late, please fill out a yellow slip if you'd like to speak to the issue or your particular issue. We welcome your comments. Limit them, please, to 3 minutes. And I will go ahead and recognize the first aspect of tonight's hearing on enforcement practices through community policing specialist presentation. So without further delay, if that's Ms. Neville. Thank you. As she's coming, this was a product of Mr. Barrios' request regarding some of the enforcement and as well as last meeting's request to better understand the enforcement practices, and we appreciate Ms. Neville for making her presentation.
Good afternoon. I'm Michelle Neville with the San Bernardino Police Department. I've been with the city over 21 years. First 8 with the police, then the next 14 with the code enforcement, and then back to the police department. I've been working marijuana dispensaries for about 2 years now, pretty much exclusively. I've put together a little bit of a PowerPoint, which includes some photos and some comments that I receive from your constituents about how they're dealing with the dispensaries and how it affects their lives, that you can find on the GoEnforce or the CRM system. So first, we'll go over how I identify the dispensaries. A lot of times it's citizen complaints, complaints from police officers, websites, advertising, and just by driving past and seeing the signs. When we do find a dispensary, we conduct an inspection to make sure it's a dispensary and what other violations we might observe on the property, like graffiti and trash and debris and any other thing violating the city codes. We'll go back to the office, we'll check the business registration, water records, tax records, try to find everybody involved so that we can send them a notice of violation to let them know that dispensaries are prohibited in the city. And it also lets them know that if there's graffiti, there's trash and debris, if they have other violations, then those things are also noted. We post that copy onto the building. If it is occupied, I will, because I'm required to take a photograph of it, I'll take it off the door and take it inside to them so that they don't have city notice on the door. And I'll explain to them that dispensaries are prohibited in the city. After about 15 days, which is the time we give them to make the corrections, we'll go back and check. If the dispensary is closed, then we can close the case, except that the other violations exist, like the graffiti and such, that still has to be handled. If they don't close, then we'll issue the administrative civil penalties notice and order. The fines of that begin at about $1,000 a day. We complete photographs, a whole packet for the city attorney's office, which includes photographs, all our notices, all our contacts with the people involved, and we send that to the city attorney's office. They prepare that for a hearing before an administrative hearing officer who's not a city employee. He's an independent administrative officer. We have the hearing. All the parties we have identified are notified that of the hearing and when it will be held so that they can be there. The hearing officer listens to both sides and reviews all the evidence and makes his order. And then the city attorney's office sends a copy of that notice or that order to all involved parties. The hearing order also provides time frames to bring the property in compliance and the amount of the daily penalties, if any. If they fail to comply, then we have to obtain an inspection abatement warrant. That basically allows us code enforcement, community policing, police officers, other city officials to inspect the properties. A lot of times we find substandard conditions, hazardous electrical, holes in the walls, holes in the floors, all sorts of water and electrical damage. Safety and health and safety code violations. We photograph everything, but we leave it on site, so we don't take their money or their product. The photographic evidence is provided to the city's attorney's office, and they prepare the injunction for the dispensary. So we have, I've chosen three that have affected the quality of life in the city. This Canna Cabana, which was at 376 West 16th Street, was one such property. The property owners, they're going under LLCs now, or so they're kind of anonymous, but the employees we found working there live in Tarzana, Running Springs, Beaumont, and Chino. Most of them were under the age of 25. The only access to the dispensary was through the alley on the north side of the street. The alley provided access to the houses on 17th Street, most of which have garages, and they only access the garages via the alley. This was also a dispensary that was robbed at gunpoint, and that's the reason that this dispensary closed. I have complaints. These complaints, you can see, are from citizens. I've removed their names because I don't want to make that public, but it's all available in the CRM system. You probably have that, where this day, this lady's was just laying in bed, and the an apple came through the window, and all sorts of problems with that, glass and her children, and she was scared. There were a lot of things, plus people blocking the driveway and trying to get them to move, and I've had problems even in that alley trying to get the people to move. I had to issue citations to get people to move. Apartment property owners who are dealing with the consequences of their tenants having to live with the smell, the customers, loud music, all sorts of problems going on. And they just don't understand why this is happening in their neighborhood. Of course, when you do ask them sometimes to move, they do get called some fairly nasty names, which kind of make them unhappy as well. The next one is 1041 North Mount Vernon, and that place is called Highway to Heaven. It's open at different hours. This one is... Mr. Johnson, when he was a council person, complained about this one. The water and trash service was never initiated at the property. That's becoming a thing so that we don't have access to anybody's name through the water and trash service registration from the city. We issued a notice of violation. They did not comply. We issued administrative civil penalties. We re-inspected and no compliance. We served an inspection warrant. There was an active marijuana dispensary at the property. There was unsanitary conditions also. And the employees there live in Colton, Hemet, San Bernardino, and Chino. Most of those were under the age of 25 also. Those volunteers were issued administrative civil penalties, notice and order. Right now they're dumping trash in the parking lot. It was closed for a short time after a warrant inspection and then reopened and continued to operate without the water and refuse service. The hours of operation vary considerably because of they just go when they want to, but the customers don't know what time it is, so they just show up and rattle the doors, which causes burglary alarms, which basically every other day somebody from the police department has to go and check the property to make sure a burglary is not in progress. Also, apparently, there's been some fire alarms too, causing the fire department to roll out. So this is what they had inside. They have their display cases with the marijuana. They have their edibles that look just like candy for kids. Some unsanitary conditions since they didn't have water or anything like that. They'll have their price boards up, which tell the prices of the product for the day. They have a dab thing, and I've always been asked what that is, so I Googled it. So I find these dab bars in most dispensaries, and apparently it's a way of just getting really high really fast. So now you can see the pictures show this big stagnant lake of water. The drain in that part of the parking lot is blocked, so no water is draining. And they are just piling the trash outside. That dispensary was also subject to a robbery at one time. So 1208 West Highland, this property has been used as a dispensary on several occasions. It's a residential neighborhood and complaints from area residents. The owner lives in Santa Ana. On February 23rd, we conducted an inspection and issued a notice of violation. I went inside. I talked to the security guard. I told him dispensaries were not allowed in the city. Some of the citizen complaints directly out of the CRM is and quoted and just copied right out of there. It's too close to my house where the kids play outside. It's bad for our business. Move forward, not backwards. You can see where people are going with this. Also another complaint from a different person about this dispensary. On March 28th or thereabouts, armed robbery occurred at the dispensary. Shots were fired, and the security guard was injured. We also issued an administrative civil penalties notice and order, which we'll be going to hearing very soon. The dispensary has been closed since the robbery. This is the dispensary. These are crime scene photos, so that's where shots fired. The bullet went through the blinds and out the window. Blood on the floor. And this is a security guard we talked to on the first day we were there, and he's a very nice guy who got whacked over the head with some sort of weapon. So the break room, bad news, it's actually in the city limits. I know you guys thought it was county, but it's not. We did an inspection warrant with the sheriff's department. And these are what we found when we were there. It's a nice building that's been redone. That's the check-in window and a very nice-looking display area. And their medications and their paraphernalia, their daily specials. And they've been doing a lot of wiring. It's already starting a fire. They kept the people there working. You can start to see the electrical, also a dab bar. Hazardous use of extension cords. They had a couple grow rooms. As you can see, it's a lot of electrical, a lot of lighting, ventilation's required, air conditioning. Hazardous electrical there. They're putting in new panels. Just running cables everywhere. Some of the cables are broken, split, and unsafe. That's the access to the attic. Up in the attic, our building inspector found that they had cut into the trusses, making the roof system unstable. It would require a structural engineer to find a remedy for that because you can't cut into the trusses. Four air conditioning systems were put up there, and that's why they had to cut into the trusses to get those AC units up in there. The wiring is hectic. They apparently spread cocoa around to keep the smell down. I found that interesting up in the attic, but you can see they're just running wires everywhere. They have pre-rolled joints for sale, hazardous electrical everywhere, and just basically kids, just I think six girls all under 21, just working in there not knowing that they're in a fire hazard. Oops. So that dispensary was closed, and as far as I'm aware, it hasn't reopened. Any questions?
All right. Thank you, Ms. Neville. I want to go ahead and open it to the panel for any questions. Mr. Nickel?
Well, let me start by asking questions regarding how we enforce the code against other types of violations of our municipal code.
Actually, this the very same way.
Well, let me ask a few specific questions. One of the concerns that's been expressed to me is that illegally sell food in the city, illegally sell flowers in the city, illegally sell liquor in the city. There are some pretty strict consequences. Specifically, I was concerned about the statement that we do not seize any cash or product. Now, in the case of food vendors that are operating illegally, my understanding is we do seize their product. We do seize their equipment.
We do, and those people generally sign a waiver so that we are able to dispose of that product. But apparently there are rules that apply legally for...
So what are there are different rules that apply to marijuana than apply to pineapples?
They're not different. When we do seize, say, a food product, or lately it's been cell phones, we do have a seizure hearing, and that's held separate and apart from the administrative civil penalty or any criminal citation that that person would
okay,
get.
But what I'm talking about is the actual day that the enforcement occurs. My understanding is we do actually seize the equipment and the product of these other types of vendors. Why aren't we doing it for these dispensaries?
Typically, with the amount of product and the amount of money involved in these type of businesses, we would use a criminal warrant. Officer Neville is not a sworn officer. She's a community policing specialist. So a criminal warrant, in order to do those type of seizures, would need to be done by sworn officers. Which
and
is
are
why
we doing that?
Which is why you see the difference with the break room. That was a criminal warrant.
Okay. Are we doing that with all the dispensaries or just some? Why are we doing it with some but not all?
Lately, it's been inspection and abatement warrants done for the marijuana dispensaries.
Why aren't we issuing criminal warrants?
I would defer to the police department on that.
Okay. Well, I'd like to find out. If we're doing it for food vendors, why aren't we doing it for...
If I can just make a comment, Jason York from the City Attorney's Office regarding the food vendors, as Ms. Johns previously indicated, whenever we seize fruit from one of these vendors, they do sign a waiver that entitles us to dispose of that fruit, and essentially that is entailed.
We have any similar waiver for these dispensaries?
No.
Why
and
not?
Essentially because in the event that we do the post-seizure hearing, they would have right to a spoliation complaint against the city for any product that we seized. If it was determined that it was unlawfully seized, then we would be responsible for reimbursing them. So if we're seizing fruit from a vendor, first there's the cost of dispensing of the fruit, which is essentially throwing it in a dumpster. When we do a marijuana seizure of 3,000 plants or several hundred pounds of marijuana, you would have to take it to a landfill and essentially dump it, or you'd have to incinerate it. So these are costs that we just can't incur at this point in time.
What would be the cost of incineration?
I do not know.
Right off the top. Have we ever looked into it? Is it something we've ever evaluated?
I know that the county does 2 incinerations per year, and we do a couple of gun burns per year, and they are pretty costly, and that's the reason that we don't.
How costly are they?
Do you have any info on gun burns? I don't have that information in front of me.
Could we find out?
Absolutely.
Thank you. If you're operating a liquor store illegally, what are the consequences in the city of San Bernardino?
That's something that's actually handled by the board of ABC, so it'd be the alcohol control, and that's not something that we necessarily would deal with.
So the city doesn't get involved in illegal liquor stores?
The reports would be forwarded to ABC, as far as I know.
Okay. And do we have any equivalent enforcement arm that handles marijuana dispensaries that we would refer these types of cases to?
Not at this time. We used to do enforcement with DEA, I believe, was who we went out with. Since that time, they've issued memorandums indicating that they are defunding marijuana enforcement.
Does the district attorney provide any resources?
District attorney does not provide resources.
Does not provide resources.
Does not.
Thank you. Just a couple other items. In a typical dispensary, who actually gets served?
Are you talking about in the civil injunction proceedings?
Yes. Yeah. Who gets served?
So when you say served, I think you're talking about the named defendant in the case. So the people that are named in the case are the volunteers that are actually at the dispensary, the entity that is operating, and that's typically we discover who that is through Secretary of State's website. They have to register as a nonprofit, and then they get listed on the website. They should have an agent for service of process. So we name the dispensary entity and serve them if we can find them. A lot of times they provide bad addresses, and they're very difficult to locate. Additionally, we also name the property owner as a defendant in the civil injunction case.
So these organizations do, after we identify these organizations, these quote-unquote nonprofits, do we engage in some type of effort to ensure these organizations are, does the Secretary of State shut them down? What happens to them after they've been determined to be operating an illegal dispensary? What happens to them?
So the civil proceeding process includes naming them as a defendant. Then we proceed to try to get, if there's in a situation where there's violence that's occurred, we will go for a TRO, which is a temporary restraining order. That's something that can be done on an ex parte basis and can even be done within a couple of days. But it has to be show that the problem is exigent, that there is something going on right now that needs to be stopped. It's very hard to do when you've got a dispensary that's been open for 3 months in the city. So in the event we can get a TRO hearing, that's a court order requiring the dispensary to shut down or be held in contempt of court. After the TRO hearing, we have to have a preliminary injunction hearing, which is a secondary hearing that essentially the court listens as to whether there is justification for issuing an injunction against the dispensary while that civil proceeding is pending. We've been very successful in getting preliminary injunctions against these property owners.
How about the actual organization itself? Does the state take any action against these organizations? Do they continue to operate? Do they just, you know, we hear the term whack-a-mole, that they, you know, as soon as we shut one down, well, they just simply move a few blocks away and find some other dilapidated building to get a foothold in until we finally kick them out of there and until we actually shut these organizations down and provide some mechanism in which there is a very serious financial consequence to this type of operation. Are we just simply spending a lot of money on enforcement that just isn't really accomplishing anything?
So when you're talking about going after the entity, we do name them and we do get injunctions against those entities from
operating within the city. What typically happens to these entities? Are they...
So in my experience, a lot of times the entity will either dissolve or they'll just stop using the entity name and then they'll reform under a different entity name and start the process all over again as a new company.
Very, very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nickel.
Thank you.
Mr. Barrios?
Well, here's the rub. You know, it's legal to use marijuana in the state of California, but it's illegal to sell. And we need to come to some kind of conclusion is how are we going to gel the two and make something happen in this city so that, for one, we stop utilizing our resources and money that we don't have, and two, make a place where people can legitimately purchase medicine. I know people use it for recreation, and that's probably the majority of the use, but some people do need their medicine. Some people do use this for medicinal uses, and I want to ensure that the citizens of San Bernardino have a legitimate place to go purchase. And especially for the children that are out there that do need this medicine. So right now, I don't have a real answer to what is the city going to do, but we do need to continue the conversation and get the opinions from PD as far as how do we regulate these and how do we regulate the dispensaries? How do we legalize the purchase and the sale of marijuana in our city, because I know that they may have to be, you know, they're dealing with this more than any of us out there, and us as the officials, we need to give guidance. We need to set some type of policy to remedy this issue. And so I'd like to hear, Mr. Lawhead, if you can, your opinion on what should we do to take care of this issue in our city.
Well, I think I guess you have to make a decision as to whether you're going to, you know, one of the reasons that we're successful on the criminal side is it costs a lot of money to do the criminal side. The investigation that the Sheriff's Department assisted us on up at 1058 Kendall, I would imagine the personnel costs in that were probably, you know, over $100,000 minimum in what we spent trying to, you know, close the dispensary down. You know, we do, you know, and we have to do that if we're going to get a filing from the district attorney's office. It requires undercover buys. It requires surveillance. It requires follow-offs. It requires a lot of work to put a case together. And then after we do it, we got forensic audits. We got, you know, follow-up information that comes off computers and everything else. That's a lot of work to put into a product that is technically legal for marijuana, for medical purposes in the state. You know, it's a lot of work. I think we need to make a decision, and you as policymakers need to make that decision on whether it's legal or not legal. Right now it's illegal. We have chosen to take the civil process as our way of handling it. It's a more drawn-out process. If you file a civil case today, you know, in a regular court, you go out and file a civil case today, it's October or November before you're going to get a case. So these guys are going to operate. They're willing to pay fines. They're willing to come in here and pay $1,000 a day to operate. With what we found at 1058 Kendall, we figure that that place is making somewhere around $20,000 to $25,000 a day. You know, they're willing to pay fines. Property owners are met with, hey, you know, I'll take your place. I'll pay you $1,000 a day to let me rent your place. It takes us 90 days to get them out of the place sometimes. So for that many days, they're making that much money and still paying their fines and their fees and renting the property. So it's, I mean, it's just, we need, it's a huge mess. And I think, you know, I have my own personal views, but I'll leave those out. I think that, you know, you just need to decide what you want to do. Either it's going to be a no-go or a go. And then you're going to, if you're going to say no-go, and we're going to do criminal cases, because that's the only way we're really going to be truly effective in doing something quick. Does the city want to spend that much money per dispensary to get them shut down? And, you know, that's your policy to make. And then we have to come up with actually the personnel to be able to do it.
Thank you, Lieutenant Lawhead.
Thank you. We're now, I appreciate, thank you, Ms. Neville. Thank you, Mr. Jason. And thank you, Lieutenant, for your words tonight. I want to go ahead and open it up to our public comments. We have 11 speaker slips, so I'm going to kind of divvy it up. We have another presentation from Stacia. And I'm going to go ahead and recognize some individuals due to time constraints. So the first person would be Esmeralda Negrete, followed by Robert Porter, followed by James D'Aguilera. If you would please all stand there and be queued up and ready to go. Esmeralda Negrete, Robert Porter, and James D'Aguilera, you're recognized for 3 minutes. I want to encourage you, if you would like to share your minutes and be kind to us all and can keep your comments shorter than 3 minutes. You're not obligated to speak to 3 minutes, but the limit is 3 minutes. We welcome public comments, and Ms. Negrete.
Thank you, and thank you for I appreciate the gesture of getting us to get out of here in a timely manner. My concern here has been, of course, the abuse. At one point where I reside, we had 3 dispensaries in each corner. And I understand the perspective, there is a medical need, there is a legit medical need, but then on the other hand, we have many who are abusing it. One solution that I was thinking I would propose, and hopefully you will consider it, how about letting each ward make a decision, the residents of the ward, because they will be the ones that will be directly impacted. When we're seeing so many dispensaries in a corner where it's being abused and anybody can just pick up and open, how would we have those tough regulations where somebody's not going to come and abuse it? It's just perhaps the solution would be leave it up to each ward, you know, the residents of that ward, make that decision whether or not they would welcome it. I know that Highland has their own, you know, council agendas where they can say this is not what we're going to open up to, just in the same manner that they restrict how many sex offenders, how many parolees they welcome into their city. We need to improve our city so it's more family-friendly rather than just being the criminal attraction of the center just because our housing is low, you name it, we have it here. And that's my solution to propose to you. Perhaps you would, something that you can discuss in the future. Thank you.
Sir, I have 2 slips. Which one would you like to speak on?
You mentioned sharing time, and so...
Well,
I'll try to keep it 3 minutes, but
yeah,
just to be safe.
This is regarding item number 1. So you're recognized for 3 minutes, and I apologize. I probably shouldn't have used the term share.
Oh, okay.
So I apologize about that. That's my inaccurate statement. So 3 minutes to recognize, you're recognized up to 3 minutes on this particular item. So, Mr. De Aguilera.
We started 3 minutes now. Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, let me say I'm not an advocate for medical marijuana. I'm a former city manager, former city planning director, former planning officer for the Inland Valley Development Agency. I have a land use regulatory constitutional law background. Yes, I am an attorney. I handle this stuff for regulatory reasons, not because I'm an advocate. You've got to have a regulatory permitting system. You have to have one. You have to have a licensing system, and you've got to do background checks on whoever you license. And you've got to control this thing. Banning it is not going to work for all the reasons that the police and code enforcement have said. The fact is it is technically legal. That's a bad term to use because federal law prohibits this, so the state could not legalize it. The state passed some laws, the Compassionate Use Act, the Medical Marijuana Program Act. There's a lot of confusion about those laws, and people thought it meant they could open up medical marijuana dispensaries anywhere. The Supreme Court of California cleared that up back in 2013. I'm speaking fast. You, the cities, each city individually, I think there's 484 of you, can each draft your own zoning regulations. But these are zoning regulations. They're misdemeanors. They're not the felonies that, Councilman, you're talking about where you go out and arrest people. It's a zoning violation. I tell people it's more or less like four dogs instead of three. It's that kind of thing. It happens to be marijuana, and a lot of us object to marijuana. You know, we've got a generational split on this issue here, like our country's split on so many issues. But the wave, as you said, has come and is coming, and marijuana is not considered by the majority anymore to be a problem. And they will go recreational probably in November. That doesn't change your authority. You still have your zoning authority. All right, you can still regulate this thing, and I'm available to help in any way I can with those regulations. I did help the city of Adelanto. They came up with 26 regulatory permits just recently. I was formerly their city manager, so I helped out there. We had a new mayor out there just a few years ago who's an ex-Marine, dead set against marijuana, but we came up with regulations. We have state licensing now. That's going to be very helpful. We never had state licensing before. The state licensing became effective January 1. It's going to be very helpful. I spoke fast. I just want to repeat the word regulatory permits. I don't think you should grant any entitlements. In other words, no grandfather rights. If they misbehave, they're shut down, period. They don't get any rights, all right? Regulatory permits only.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Porter. Following Mr. Porter will be Damian Martin, followed by Mr. Elwell, Richard Elwell. Mr. Porter.
Mr. Valdivia, council, good people. Well, I watched your little presentation. Oh, man, that was so biased. Pretty mediocre, too. That was pretty biased, Mr. Valdivia. Ms. Neville, with all due respect, she obviously hates cannabis with all her heart. That's the wrong person to be dealing with the public, especially with these issues. You need someone who's neutral. I mean, she didn't even show one smile during her whole presentation there like it was a personal vendetta of hers to get rid of cannabis dispensary. And that's, I mean, I understand we have a ban and that's her job, but I think we need someone with a little bit more of an open mind doing these presentations. Now, we did shut down that dispensary that was illegal, and I heard they were doing illegal things, too, other stuff you might want to look into. I mean, of course, there was warrants there, right? But it didn't do anything. It stopped that for that day. All the people that wanted their medicine from that area still continued to get it the same day, maybe even from the same people. You didn't take any product. What did they do with that product? They just went and sold it and paid the fine. $1,000 fine a day. So you have to have $360,000 a year to pay the fine, and then the rest is gravy? And that's what they're going to do. We need a regulated system here that properly dispenses this stuff to the people who need it. I'm not trying to be an advocate, but I'm turning into one because there's no other way here. Every time we've tried to shut them down, they come right back. Now, Mr. Penman, I dig him. I like a lot of the stuff he's doing right now. But I helped recall him because he went after the dispensaries. Me personally. And I'm going to keep going with that because we need to regulate this problem. If it's being done already, why not regulate it properly and get some benefits for the city instead of all these issues? I mean, if they're not getting trash and water, why do you think? If we properly regulate them, they will be getting trash and water. And anyways, how are they running these things? They need lights for electricity. Who's receiving the tax dollars from all that electricity? Who's receiving the benefits from all this electricity? I mean, are these people are paying their bills? Is Edison just, you know, running amok with money because of cannabis lights are filling up their coffers? Let's get some of that money, too. Let's not give it all to Edison. Please, come on, guys. Everyone else has moved forward on this, and it's our time to move forward, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Damien Martin, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, LRC. I've already been introduced to the committee, so I'll just for the public's sake. My name is Damien Martin, medical cannabis policy expert and consultant. I advocate for smart regulation of medical cannabis. I'm a prior Navy veteran, and hopefully as of Friday, I'll be Friday at 6 p.m., I'll be a licensed attorney in the state of California. So, I'd first like to start and thank the committee's approach to handling this issue. We have a kind of saying from the military days, is slow is fast and fast is slow. I really appreciate and respect the diligence that's being put in. And like the focus of the meeting today, we focused on the current state of the world. It's impossible to know where you're going unless you know where you are. And I think it's clear today that where we are is in a really tough place and maybe not the best policy for regulating this issue. And on that note, I'd like to thank the police department, the city staff, for all the diligent work that they're doing in this area. It's tough to execute and implement bad policy, and they're doing their best to do it. I just want to say that there's a solution here. I think it's, as we dig into it, and hopefully I'll get to present it in more detail in the future at some point before this committee, but it's really straightforward. It's simple. You create a framework for control. You allow businesses to come in to be controlled. And I'm not just talking about dispensaries. I'm actually talking about well beyond dispensaries to an actual industry. And it's simple. And you make the regulated industry pay for the enforcement costs to get rid of the black market. It's that simple. And the regulated industry is going to gladly pay the money because the black market becomes their competitor once you set up a framework like this. And then this ultimately just becomes executed through a permit program where the permit fees are paid on an annual basis, and that money goes to the city staff, goes to the police department, and provides the resources to get rid of all the bad actors. And then hopefully, after that, the presentation we'll be seeing is businesses and maybe even dispensaries that are properly run, not with sanitary conditions, and providing product and medicine to people that legitimately need it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Richard Elwell.
Yes, thank you for your time. And I just wanted to give you a resident's perspective of the break room. I live up on Ridgeline Drive, and one of the problems that I've been having in recent years is that our beautiful view has been attractive to all kinds of people. But particularly after the break room opened, it became even more attractive to kind of a cloud of Cheech and Chong marijuana smoke up there. And I would circulate around, since we have parking restrictions up there, and just talk to the people and say, hey, you know, you guys aren't really supposed to be parking up here. But anecdotally, I came to realize that a vast majority of the people that were up there smoking dope were not from San Bernardino. And so the break room was attracting people from Ontario, Yucaipa, Rancho Cucamonga, and they were coming into the city as a result of this magnet, of this business there. And so if the medical marijuana dispensaries are inevitable, I'd like to recommend a couple things. One is was already mentioned, the whole idea of zoning. It would be great if these could be zoned away from residential neighborhoods so that the attendant problems that are created by them, in my neighborhood, it's trash, graffiti, loud noise, parties, you know, chaos, could be somewhat mitigated by putting them in light industrial or business zoning sections. And the other thing is I think if you lift these bans on dispensaries prior to the state of California voting on that law, what's going to happen is a lot of businesses will establish themselves in San Bernardino, and there'll be an disproportionate number of businesses here once it becomes legal, and we'll then become more of a magnet. So I'd prefer there be a fair distribution of these things, and each community can carry their own burden, because for me as a resident, it is a negative, and I was very grateful for the San Bernardino Police Department putting in the time, energy, and effort to shut down the break room. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is Mr. Penman still here? All right. We're going to move on to the second item under the medical marijuana discussion. I'd like to go ahead and recognize the city ordinance aspect, the fine collection, procedures, and tracking. And with that, is it Lauren or Stacia?
Stacia Johns, Deputy City Attorney. Thank you. Sure. My role today is to give you a snapshot of enforcement for 2015 and then also let you know what happens after the citations are issued and kind of pick off where Officer Neville left. I provided to the committee a map. It shows the wards. You'll see that the crosses on there represent dispensaries that were cited with an ACP, and then the green crosses with the red around them represent dispensaries that have an injunction against them, just in case you're interested in the distribution of those throughout the city. As Officer Neville mentioned, our enforcement tactic has been through a civil procedure. An ACP is typically issued to three different types of folks: the property owner, any volunteers or employees who are present at the time of the citation, and then, if possible, the entity owner. And I think it was already covered that oftentimes it's difficult for us to ascertain exactly who that is. It takes a lot of research into going on the internet, searching with the Secretary of State's website, and finding their agent for service of process and going at it that way. Typically, the fines are assessed at $1,000 a day. I think the council's aware of that. But ultimately, the fine is up to the administrative hearing officer. All of the ACPs are set for hearing automatically unless somebody decides to waive the right to a hearing and just pay the fine. Volunteers who were cited just for a one-day citation that perhaps Officer Neville hasn't seen on another occasion, and we can't necessarily show that they are there every day and it's a continuous violation, that type of citation will just be issued for $1,000 for the one day that they were there. A hearing is set typically within 60 days of the citation, and again, my goal is to help you understand how long this process takes. So within 60 days of the citation, we typically have our hearing. They're held here before an administrative officer. He'll hear evidence from both sides and ultimately assess the fine. A mitigating factor that's important for the hearing officer. I'm sorry, do you have a question?
Yeah, I keep hearing that it costs an exorbitant amount of money to shut down a dispensary. We heard a dollar figure for the break room of $100,000. And I'm trying to square the cost of shutting down a dispensary, which seems to be exorbitantly high, with the fees and fines we impose, which seem extremely low. Since this is a civil procedure, is there any way we can recover the costs of that enforcement through some kind of civil proceeding, or does the city just eat those costs? And if not, why don't we just raise the fines? I mean, shouldn't we have a fine that's at least going to cover the cost of enforcement? I mean, that just seems like if your fines don't cover the cost of enforcement, you're just inviting people to break the law.
It's $1,000 a day, which is what's permitted by the municipal code.
So the municipal code sets the ACP at 1,000 maximum?
Maximum per day, per parcel, for related activities, yes.
And so technically the Legislative Review Committee could increase that via a municipal code amendment?
There may be a restriction in the government code. I'm not sure. I would have to research that. The government code is where we derive our ACP ordinance from, and I'm not sure if that's a statutory maximum by the government code. I would have to look into
that.
Would
you please? That would be.
Sure.
And I would like to find out if we've exhausted all opportunities to ensure we can recover the costs of enforcement.
All right. Please continue, Stacia.
Sure.
Or Jason, please.
Mr. Ewart. Just to give you a little bit of idea about the $1,000 penalty, it's supposed to be proportionate to a misdemeanor violation, and under the penal code, $1,000 is the typical violation. So there may be a restriction on increasing it over that $1,000 per day for related series of violations at a particular parcel. As to the cost recovery, in civil litigation, we do recover costs every single time so far.
So that $100,000 will eventually recoup?
That $100,000 was for criminal enforcement. Civil enforcement is the ACP process and the litigation that ensues afterwards.
So we have no way of recovering the criminal enforcement?
Not the $100,000 if we do a criminal warrant.
So the city eats that?
Essentially, yes.
Is there a remedy to that?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right, very good.
I think I left off talking about the hearing process. One mitigating factor that the hearing officer will consider is whether or not the cited party has initiated an unlawful detainer action or an eviction. Typically, an unlawful detainer action takes about 60 days, so that will slow our process by at least that much. If penalties go unpaid, they continue to accrue on a daily basis and eventually can reach the municipal code maximum of $100,000. And that is placed as a lien on the property. Another thing we consider at that point when the fines are maxed out is a civil injunction, which was discussed earlier by Mr. Ewart. That's based on our resources. We use an outside counsel firm to assist us with those injunctions. Those that are a priority are dispensaries that have showed dangerous behavior or defiant toward law enforcement, or persistent if they've been operating for a long time, or those that have closed down and popped up elsewhere. Another aspect of the procedure is after the hearing, a hearing order is issued, and the cited party can appeal that hearing order to the Superior Court. It's called a writ. It's a request for judicial review of the hearing officer's decision. So by the time the hearing order is mailed out, from that mailing day, the cited party has 90 days to file a writ within Superior Court. So that's another part of the process that draws it out. If a writ is filed within those 90 days, briefing and law and motion takes place between our office and the cited party's attorney, and typically that can it's at least 90 days. It can go up to 6 months or higher, depending on the court's docket. Like I mentioned before, and as discussed by Jason Ewart, an injunction is something that we consider for those who are dangerous, defiant, and persistent. Typically, a judge wants to see us engage our administrative process, but like Jason already explained, you can get a temporary restraining order in a more expedient way, but there needs to be a showing of exigency, so type of violence at the alleged dispensary. Right now, we have 12 injunction cases, and they're all at varying stages. Some have closed down, some are just in the initiation, and many of them we have the preliminary injunctions. Once we get the injunction, there are a couple different ways it can go. They close down, or they continue to operate in violation of the injunction. If they violate the injunction, our next step would be to initiate contempt proceedings, and that's also done through the civil court. You bring them back in front of the judge. Potentially there's jail time. Otherwise, that's up to the judge what happens next. Some of them have closed and settled, and what we do there is we have them pay the penalties and plus a share of the attorney's fees that we incurred.
Stacia, I have a question for you. What percentage of cases actually go to the contempt hearings and process?
The civil injunctions is something that we started doing last year. So right now is when we would be considering contempt proceedings for the first time. And that's something that we're discussing with our outside counsel right now.
Outside counsel, because this is referred out on the contempt proceedings.
The injunction, the entire process, starting with the temporary restraining order all the way to potentially a permanent injunction and or contempt proceedings, that is handled by outside counsel but managed by the city attorney's office.
Okay, very good.
I think I left off talking about settlements. In the event somebody doesn't adhere to the settlement agreement, we have a provision in the settlement contract that states that the judge that oversaw the injunction retains jurisdiction over the settlement if there are any issues, so those can be resolved in civil court as well. I have a few statistics, and this is just for 2015. 53 citations total were issued at 23 different addresses. 24 of those were property owners, 10 were dispensary entity operators, and 19 volunteers, employees, or security guards that work at those locations. I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
All right, Mr. Barrios, any questions?
No questions. I just really analyzing everything that we're hearing here today so far, and I'm trying to find a reason why we should continue with our ban, and I just don't see, doesn't make any sense anywhere to continue. And so what was asked earlier is, are we, as a council now, willing to move forward and say, are we going to regulate or not? And I think that's where I'm at right now, and that we may need to discuss, are we going to regulate or are we going to stick with the ban? And I think that's our first point or first step in moving forward, because it was asked earlier just from Lieutenant Lawhead, like, well, do you guys want us to stick with the ban or not? And I think that answers a lot of questions, and that right now it's kind of clear that we need to regulate.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Nickel?
Well, I want to appreciate the presentations that were given today. I think this exposed a lot of information and I think helped illuminate a lot of the challenges that we're dealing with in terms of enforcement. In my mind, it's actually raised a lot more questions. And specifically, I think the bottom line for me is the bottom line. What is the cost? What is the cost of permitting this type of activity in our city? What is the cost of prohibiting this type of activity in our city? Either way, there's going to be costs. If you permit it, you still have costs because you have to maintain a regulatory structure, which means you need mechanisms of effective enforcement. If you prohibit, there has to be an investment in, again, the mechanisms of effective enforcement of a prohibition. So either way, there's going to be costs. And I think what I'm struggling with is really understanding essentially two columns. One is, okay, let's permit this, regulate this, what would be the cost? And let's continue the prohibition, and ideally let's do it more effectively, because clearly if we have this many dispensaries operating in the city, something's not working. Obviously we are not prohibiting it, and we need to understand what those costs are. I think we've touched on the cost of what it took to shut down this particular dispensary, multiply that out many times, and then also consider the fact that even when you do shut them down, you aren't confiscating any of their product, you aren't taking their money. All you're doing is providing, at best, a minor inconvenience that they have to essentially relocate, but they aren't really losing their product. And if you aren't taking that approach to ensure that there are truly consequences to violating the prohibition, well then, what are we doing? So I think what I'd like to do in our next conversation is really understand in these two columns of regulating permitting what would be the costs of an effective regulatory system. Obviously, the city needs to recover the costs that it would incur to ensure that we are able to, in fact, regulate and control this in the city. And then also in the other column, which is the current prohibition column, what additional costs or resources would be required for us to reach that level of enforcement. Clearly, $1,000 a day fine just isn't cutting it. And if we're being told, well, we really don't have any other tools at our disposal, well, then it does suddenly become clear to me that, well, then I guess prohibition doesn't work, unless I'm wrong. And I'd like to know, if I'm wrong, why am I wrong? And how am I wrong? Because a $1,000 a day fine for a business that's churning out potentially tens of thousands of dollars a day in profit doesn't square. It just doesn't make sense to me. So until you can explain to me how you effectively prohibit this and do it in a way that ensures that the city is able to sustain that level of enforcement, or are we just simply going to dump millions of dollars of general fund every year into a prohibition scheme and hope it works? But clearly, from what I've heard from some of the testimony today from our legal counsel, even if you do that, you're limited in terms of what exactly you can do. I'd like to hear some alternative viewpoints if there are some more effective mechanisms of enforcement. But to be perfectly honest, today, I haven't heard it. It doesn't sound like we can effectively prohibit this. And I would invite anybody to come up here and tell me I'm wrong and why I'm wrong. But with that, I would like to ask that perhaps the committee in our next discussion really begin to drill down in terms of what the cost would be on these two, essentially these two options that we have in front of us right now, and really understand how we can effectively enact either a prohibition or a regulatory permissive type of structure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Mr. Barrios.
Yes, as far as the costs, Mr. Nickel, as you spoke, by keeping this banned and the costs are not recovered, obviously, from what testimonies we've gotten here today. And even when we do recover some, there's a negotiation to bring it down, and we've been in closed session before, and that has happened. We've seen it happen to where even if the fine did get up to $100,000, that's not what these people are paying. But if it is allowed, the industry itself, I think, will more than recover the costs that it takes to have this regulation in place. And I just wanted to recommend that Mr. Damian Martin give us a presentation on the costs and how this framework would work. As he has said, he has given me a presentation before, and it was very impressive. And maybe even work with the city's attorney's office to work with him and to ensure and vet his opinion and not just his opinion, but a true projection of what this industry would look like operating in San Bernardino.
Very good. At the end of the day, we have a responsibility and an obligation as a study workshop setting to also ask the question, what do our taxpayers want? We sometimes get myopic in our viewpoint regarding the dispensary issues, but as Mr. Madrid had suggested last month in his presentation to this committee, he suggested that there are almost well over 15 various types of buckets. I think the number is 17 different aspects to this. So let's not just get carried away with dispensaries, but let's also look at the other implications of this licensing possibilities and opportunities. Distribution, transportation, lab testing, and a whole host of other sundry items irrespective and on top of the dispensary issue. Dispensary issue is probably, I would imagine, just anecdotally polling here our community here present, it's probably 3 out of 4 are present here concerning dispensary issues. But there are other aspects that are deeper into this conversation. The most public and prevalent outlook on marijuana is immediately what I get called many times by my constituents regarding the dispensary aspect. And so I also need to remind myself that there are many other aspects evolving from the dispensary issue to the tune of almost 17 other aspects. So I appreciate Mr. Nickel and Mr. Barrios. Thank you, gentlemen, for your input. I'm going to recognize some more public comments, and then I also see Mr. Penman. I'll recognize Mr. Penman for 5 minutes, sir, after we get some more public comments. I'd like to get a historical perspective from enforcement components from our former city attorney. But I'm going to go ahead and recognize some public speakers here, and we're going to continue. We have about 6 more public speakers regarding this particular item. And I'd like to recognize Kathy Mellon, followed by Richard Rodriguez, followed by Steph Smith. If you would please line up in your order called. And again, we want to encourage public comments, and we welcome it. 3 minutes is your time limit, and if you don't have to use all 3 minutes, but you're welcome to use it. And we appreciate our public here. Kathy?
Thank you. First of all, I want to say I want to encourage that you change the time of these meetings so that those of us that work can not have to take time off of work to be at these. I think they're very important meetings. So I just want to encourage you to look at changing the time frame a little bit to evenings. Quality of life for the residents in the city must be the paramount decision maker as you move forward on this process. Most of us in the city are left with only the perspective of what is currently happening, which is obviously not working. On my way here, I passed 3 green neon signs. It's almost like it's an in-your-face thing. Now, I don't want people to take me the wrong way. I'm a child of the 70s. I was a teenager in the 70s. I have partaken. I am not opposed to medical use of it. I am not opposed, here comes the shock, to recreational use of it, with the understanding that those people who break the law will break the law. The laws won't matter to them. They will continue to do things outside of the scope of an ordinance or a regulation because that's their human nature. Those of us that have partaken in a responsible manner will follow the laws. I'm not going to put myself in a dangerous position. Speaking of which, one of the things that is paramount in this is understanding what is happening with our crime in our city. January through April 2016, there were 880 motor vehicle thefts in the city of San Bernardino, 828 simple assaults, 797 burglaries, 633 aggravated assaults, 498 thefts from vehicles, 347 robberies, 186 drug violations, 88 larcenies from buildings, and 65 reports of stolen property. I didn't bring up the real violent one, the homicide. We all know what's going on with that. These crimes that I listed are the ones that impact my quality of life in my city, my feeling of safety and security in my home. Those are the things that impact us. And when we make the decisions regarding medical marijuana, there are other issues that have to be considered. Medical versus recreational, commercial versus residential, and then you have cultivation versus dispensing. So, and Councilman Valdivia pointed up, there's 17 buckets that go into this. So there's a lot more that goes into it, and I think We need to approach this with a clear mind and an understanding that what we have been doing does not work. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Rodriguez. Thank you, sir.
Richard Rodriguez. Didn't expect to come up here, but I've been listening to this time limit on how long it takes to prosecute these people. You know, why did it take 15 days? I mean, you can get a person evicted, 3-day notice, boom, they're out of the... You get, you know, unless they sit there and fight you, and then you got to go to court for 30 days. But why did it take so long? I mean, if it's illegal, which right now is still illegal, you can have it at your house if you want to. If you want to partake in it in your home, I'm all for it. But if you can get a doctor to give you a medical for you need... My grandmother had it. My great-grandmother had it. She'd grow a plant. She had it for arthritis. I'm not saying that people don't use it. They've been using it for years. But right now, it's illegal. If you want to do it in your own home, you can do whatever you want in your home. But there's three dispensaries up on Waterman and Gilbert, right across from the street from each other, open all night. There's one across on Mount Vernon. I don't know if that's the one you guys were talking about. It used to be a church. It's right across the street from a school. They shouldn't even be near schools. They shouldn't be sold to kids. I mean, I know kids, teenagers, they can get a card. They're not even sick. But they can go and get a card, a medical card. I mean, what kind of doctor issues a medical card to teenagers? You know, I mean, if you got all these dispensaries, just like you say, you confiscate fruits, illegal pillows, you guys confiscate them, you tear them all up, throw them in the dumpster, confiscate the plants, get a chipper, grind them all up, mix them in with some wood trees and stuff, make fertilizer out of it. If it's illegal, I mean, think outside the box. You guys are always talking about thinking outside the box. Grind it up, mix it in, make fertilizer out of it. But, I mean, I've heard all this stuff today, and it just irritated the heck out of me. And until it becomes legal, if it becomes legal in November, if people vote to have it, then fine. Then you'll have to find a way to regulate it. But right now, it's illegal. But if you want to have it at home, grow your plants, do whatever you want at home, you can do whatever you want to at home. You can drink at home. You can do whatever you want to. But until a doctor prescribes it and says, hey, you need to go to a pharmacy that sells this stuff, I don't know why they can't have it. You know, there's pharmacies everywhere. They should have a pharmacy just for this. Why do they have to have dispensaries all over the place? I could drive all over town, and there's green crosses 24 hours a day. People, I mean, who's out there all night long trying to sneak in to get their stuff to a back door or to a side door if this is medicine? If it truly is a medicine, you shouldn't have to sneak into any place to get your medicine. So, you know, until it becomes legal, you're going to have to find a way of regulating it. And right now it's illegal. Confiscate it. If you find a place that's opened up, confiscate it. Get rid of it. Mix it in with something else. Throw a couple of eucalyptus trees in there and grind it up. I tell you what, if you keep losing your stuff, it's going to hurt. All I got to say about it.
Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Steph Smith.
Hi. I'd like to just bring about a little bit of discussion on the business side of this. I think there's some emotions on all sides. And as we discussed earlier, this is in some ways about patient access, but it's also about business. It's also about money. It's about businesses that can pay $1,000 a day fine. And if those businesses are able to make so much money, they really should be allowed access to permits. And from there, they should be given opportunities to have employees that are on payrolls. And from there, we should have opportunities to tax them. That this is sort of the big question here is, how do you regulate this and how do you enforce this? Well, you do that through money, but money in terms of penalties I don't think is effective. It doesn't go where it needs to go, and it's not an efficient use of our resources. What's an efficient use is a system of permits and applications of background checks. and of taxation. And along those lines, I would say there's a big focus here tonight, as completely understandably, on the dispensaries, because they are the public face of this industry, and it is a legitimate industry. And what's behind the scenes, as we talked about a little bit here, were these 17 buckets. And I don't know what all 17 buckets were discussed, but I come from a real estate background and a real estate family, and we own many different types of real estate. I have more than 30 buildings that we own that have cultivation sites in them that are also called grows. And I don't have a great insight into the dispensary process, but I do have a great insight into the cultivation process. And I would estimate, and I don't have figures on this, that for each dispensary you have here, and you have about 30, you have at least 5, 6, 7 cultivation sites. And I haven't heard enough talk about that, because that's really, A, where you should be focused in terms of revenue, that they are producing all the things that are being sold. They're employing more employees, and that's where you're going to find the largest amount of marijuana in one place, and that it should be regulated in a way that makes more sense than this current system. And what to say from there? I think I'd like to see a little bit more focus on the dynamic nature of the marijuana industry, a little bit more information. I was a little disappointed to see that the police had to Google what a dab is. And if they came up with the idea that this is simply just a faster way to get high, I think that that's not the kind of informed decision maker I would hope would be in charge of this. That this is a complex issue, and it's simpler than just how to regulate a dispensary, and it's more complicated than simply proving that we need to recoup the cost of enforcement. I think it's a big picture. I'd like to see a larger discussion on these 17 buckets, and I'd like to see more focus on safe planning and regulation.
Ms. Smith, I want to encourage you, if you have an opportunity, to listen to the last LRC meeting, Mr. Madrid's presentation on the 17 buckets. And I think we have some handouts if you want to contact the council office. We have those. It's almost like a cartoon version and a reference point on the 17 aspects of this very important topic. I point you only as a resource and a reference for your curiosity and pursuit of quest for knowledge. That was a very informative LRC, so it is on audio tape on the website. And you suggest that you have 30 real estate properties. Are any of them here in our community?
They may or may not be here in your community. I will say that since 2009, I've never had a building have a raid, never have a problem with a neighbor, never had a fire. And that's because, looking forward, I think my family has always believed that this is not just a social justice issue, it's an issue of economics, and it's going to be legal. And we ask all of our tenants to build out everything to code. We ask them to do background checks. They follow the Cole memo. They're all represented by attorneys. And they are all large scale. Our minimum size is 10,000 square feet. And I think that's another conversation to have. Is
sure. I appreciate that.
Small and large.
Do you also live in this city?
I don't, no.
Thank you. Our next public speaker is Carolyn Conley, followed by Amir Bates, followed by William Ciosi, followed by John, trying to get this last name, John S. If you would, please. Yes. So, thank you, sir. If you'd line up, please. Carolyn Conley, Amir Bates, William Ciosi, and John.
Good evening.
Ms. Conley.
Can you hear me? Marijuana is classified under federal law as a Schedule I drug. The definition of a Schedule I drug is it has high abuse potential and it has no significant medical use. That's our federal government saying that. We as voters have elected to give it an opportunity to dispute that. It doesn't seem to be happening. I have to say to Councilman Barrios, if we're standing on the pretense that we're obligated to provide medical marijuana clinics for people who are sick, we are in serious trouble, because we've got a lot of sick people. It's overwhelming. You can tell by the dollar amount that these dispensaries are pulling in. If we've got that much sickness going on in our society is crumbling. I'm very concerned about our going in a direction of building castles on sandbars. If I were in this business, and it's very much a criminal element, we know that for a fact. If I were in this business and you were dropping down on me with, you are going to get a permit, you are going to provide electricity, you're going to provide salaries, you're going to provide water sources, you're going to provide, and then you tell me the federal government is going to take X number of dollars of my income in taxes, and then the state is going to take X number of dollars in taxes, I'm going to go mobile. And you're not going to touch me. Okay? I hope that Michelle would have expounded on dab bars. We know for a fact that there is a dab bar in existence in every identified clinic in this city. A dab bar, by standard, a good high from THC is 15 to 18% of THC content. A dab bar provides 75 to 100% THC per concentrate. Can you imagine what that person who pulls up to the curb with his baby mama in the car, with his car seat in the back, with his dog on the seat, runs in, pops down a few bucks on the counter, and takes a good hit and runs back out and jumps in that car is feeling like? They're not even in this world. And they're out in our society. They're putting us all in jeopardy. Okay? The candy is out there. The sugar has been given to the babies. We're not going to successfully do this anytime soon. Okay? What's going to happen is we're going to have more police officers to manage these people going mobile because they're not going to give up this good money. And guess who's going to pay for more police officers? The taxpayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Conley. Amir Bettis. Sir, welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. It's Amir Bettis. And I would like to say thank you to you, sir. You went ahead and returned my phone call after I called and spoke with your office. I found out about this issue in the San Bernardino Sun, and I really just wanted to come down and speak to this council. I just wanted to let you guys know my feelings on it. My thought is, rather than saying that this is a problem, this city needs to embrace it. This city has open prostitution right on G Street. This is a dying city. We have a lot of problems in this city. So if we have over 30 medical marijuana dispensaries in this city, rather than viewing it as a problem, we need to go ahead and create a regulatory body so that way we can go ahead and get tax money from this. If you look at examples like Colorado, you look at Orlando City in Florida, which just allowed for legalization, all of these places are making lots of money in taxes from cannabis. A lot of people say money doesn't grow on trees. Well, apparently it does, because cannabis is a cash crop. You can go ahead and fix all the problems going on in this city if you would just allow for regularization and taxation of cannabis. In regards to some of the speakers that you've had, some of the facts are wrong. Marijuana is not this evil thing. Marijuana is evil because, you know, the 1920s, you had Hearst. He went ahead and paid for the legalization of marijuana because he wanted, you know, cotton papers rather than hemp. You have Nixon in the 70s, and that's what allowed for the creation of the DEA and, you know, all the problems that we have from there. We have to realize that we're talking about a plant here. We're talking about a plant that your body has natural systems to go ahead and process. It needs to be regulated, yes. We can't be having, you know, dab bars and such. These are places that are supposed to sell the plants. I've never seen a dab bar in any of my collectives I've gone to. But, you know, just find a process to go ahead and regulate it, go ahead and tax it, so that way you can make money off of it. Also, in regards to the $100,000 that was spent in shutting down a dispensary, the fact is that if you just went ahead and stopped viewing it as a criminal problem, you wouldn't have to spend $100,000 to shut down a dispensary. In fact, you'd probably make $100,000 just on taxing it. You would make money for this city. You would fix the problems that are in this city. You would fix the crime. You would fix the prostitution. You would fix tons of things. If you just go ahead, find a way to regulate it, find a way to tax it. The city, the county, the state, they can all go ahead and tax it. And also, I mean, you just look at history, each and every single time that we've gone ahead and not embraced something, like I'm going to say an example, the music industry, they didn't embrace downloading of music, Napster and the such. What happened to that industry? It's completely changed now, right? Everyone can go ahead and download whatever they want. You know, we have things like Apple Music now and such. But once you go ahead and embrace change, you can bring about a system where we can actually make money off of it.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Appreciate your time. Mr. Ciocci?
Hello. Good afternoon. William Ciocci, 4th Ward resident, President Brown and Mary Democratic Club, San Bernardino County, member of High Desert Cannabis Association. Man, just so many different things. So one of the things that was brought up, we have this natural endocannabinoid system in our bodies. This makes all use medical. There is no such thing as recreational use. There are people that go out and use this to have a good time. There are people that eat oranges to have fun too. This is a plant that naturally enables our immune system to function properly. That's why it has so many of these wonderful medicinal effects. There are people that may have endocannabinoid deficiencies, and they will never, ever understand none of this, and they will try and demonize and criminalize the plant to the ends of the world. And that's the bottom line. There are people that have this deficiency in this vitamin, and they declare war on the people that want to be healthy. We heard all of this other stuff Henry brought up about enforcement, and he mentioned about alcohol. What do we do when we have illegal alcohol dispensaries or liquor stores? I mean, this is what we call dispensaries. We have alcohol dispensaries. We have caffeine dispensaries. We have drug dispensaries all over the city. We have medical cannabis access points will be regulated by the state in 2018. You will not have to spend another penny as a city after 2018. The Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation will be the state's alcohol regulatory arm that will take care of the illegal dispensaries. That's what will happen. Have I lied to you about anything yet? I've been telling you what's going to happen for years, from greenhouses to how this is going to be regulated to how people use this medicine. As a resident of this city, this is a quality of life issue for me. I deserve safe access to my medicine. I shouldn't have to go to gangsters and drug dealers, and I shouldn't have to deal with bigoted opinions that rule over me and try to force me to become a second-class citizen. That's really, again, what it comes down to, is how people want to control others. We can regulate this. We should have regulated this. 20 years, this has been the state law. There's no discussion if this is medicine or not. It's been state law that this is medicine 20 years now. Patent number 6,630,507, owned by the United States government. Cannabinoids as neuroprotectants and antioxidants, prevents heart attacks, prevents strokes. There is no recreational, only preventative medicine.
Thank you, Mr. Ciocci. Next speaker is John, and I apologize, sir, your last name?
Zweck, sir.
Zweck.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Zweck.
Zweck. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to, on behalf of Diamond Health Advocates, which actually is a 501c3 corporation that works at the Children's Hospitals of Los Angeles and San Diego, donates 100% of the proceeds to all those foundations. You know, compliment you and appreciate and say thank you for the job that you're doing here today. It's a very tough, tough job. You're forced with different agendas that just are very, very sensitive, just like the Compassionate Use Act of 1996. You know, this is one thing that's really sensitive, It was meant and produced for ADA, and taking it and following the footsteps of any other city, county, district that have implemented different business licenses, rules, regulations, I just ask that you look at everything and ask yourself questions. You know, what will transforming it do to our city and county? How will things make things better? You know, I mean, conforming and going above the Compassionate Use Act. You know, people say, yeah, taxing, I concur with the residents of this city. You know, taxing it, 2007, Board of Equalization produced a special memorandum saying that they accept sales tax on any tangible item as per medical marijuana. You know, the presentations, they're a little bit out of place, but there's no direction from anybody. Everybody's working in their own system to try to figure out what's going on. And looking at a system like that, it's going to cause confusion. You know, everybody looks at one thing. Out of those 30 places, how many of them were paying sales tax? How many of them were paying their Secretary of State fees? How many of them on their employees paid employer's tax? How many of them had workers' comp in place? Those are questions to be asking. Criminal activities supersede situations like that and move from different circumstances. And that's what you have presented here. You have an abundance of different questions, different theories, different things. The dab bars, I totally agree with it. You know, that's one thing, too. You look at it, you know, health and safety code sections have been written nonstop. You know, this has been going on since 1996. 11379.6A states that the Bergen decision, you can't make any butane products. You know, it's looking at the things that are beneficial for the residents, for the future residents, for our children of our state and our country. You know, I mean, if concentrates can work good in helping a 60 and 70-year-old person not take Oxycontins, not take codeine, you know, you have people that are doing things right, paying sales tax, paying workers' comp, paying employers' tax, and you look at, what, replacements for heroin? They don't pay taxes on that? Just take things in consideration, look at all aspects, look at all things in general, and try to make the right decision. A lot of other cities, counties, they follow on this. Oh, let's put 30,000, let's put 40,000, let's put 50,000 for licensing. You look at other states that are recreational, they're 4,000 for a license. You know, I mean, looking at things and getting people to go in different directions starts with progress moving forward, not looking at things saying, can we do something to provide this? No, we can't do this, so we should do that. That's a negative activity. Just look forward and try to make the right decision.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comment. I want to remind those in attendance, the next LRC meeting will be convening on Tuesday, June 14th. So please mark your calendars, Tuesday, June 14th at 4 p.m. Also on Tuesday, July 12th at 4 p.m. The issue regarding later in the evening, actually it was a compromise. I wanted to start them at 4:30 or 5, and we had a reasonable compromise with Councilman Barrios's busy schedule, and I appreciate the committee leaving their workplace to come. And so it was a reasonable compromise to 4 o'clock, and so we're trying to accommodate all members of our committee, certainly the public, and we appreciate that. I want to encourage, if you do have a public comment or a letter of interest regarding this topic, you can always email the council at sbcity.org. council@sbcity.org. You can also reach us at 909-384-5188 and leave messages for respective council members, and we welcome that. I understand that. Yeah, I see you. You have a blue slip, so we'll recognize you in just a moment, sir. I want to invite Mr. Penman. Mr. Penman was our former city attorney, and I think looking at it through a historical lens and perspective, I appreciate the past, and I certainly appreciate the good work and efforts of Mr. Penman and his. And I want to recognize, the chair will recognize Mr. Penman for 5 minutes on a historical perspective of your work. Thank you, sir.
A very quick disclaimer, the law firm of Milligan, Beswick, Levine & Knox has clients who operate dispensaries in other cities, not in San Bernardino. We have one client who owns a building. She inherited the lease, which had a retail marijuana business in it. We successfully closed all of the clinics in San Bernardino the week after the California Supreme Court made its decision in the Riverside case. We did it through administrative warrants. We seized product and we seized money. and we close them down. Because we seized the money and the product, two-thirds of them did not reopen. There were between 33 and 37 in the city when we began our effort. One-third of them did, which is between 9 and 12. Now, none of this should be viewed as a criticism of the police department or the city attorney's office, because they do not have the resources today that they had then. The city attorney's office had 10 city attorney investigators. They have none today. The police department had close to 100 more officers, and they did not have the level of homicides that they have today. So we're in a very different situation. We closed those down. 9 to 12 reopened. We quickly extended the warrants, went back and closed them down, seized their product again. That pretty much took care of it for several months. We had the strong will of the city council to close them. There was no debate such as going on now. The ordinance prohibited them. The council wanted them closed. City attorney's office was the prosecutorial arm of the city, and we closed them, and they stayed closed. The $1,000 fines were helpful, but were not essential. The seizing of the product and the seizing of the money was what was, and the availability of the city attorney investigators to check daily on these sites and go back and close them down, where the police did not have to be involved on a day-to-day basis. City attorney investigators also got the administrative warrants. The law firm of Best, Best & Krieger puts out a newsletter in which it advises its clients, and it probably has more municipalities than any other law firm in the state, that the most successful city in closing the marijuana clinics was the city of San Bernardino through the use of administrative warrants. However, it pointed out that the administrative warrants were labor-intensive, which we knew. We were prepared to use injunctions, and we discussed that fact with some of the lawyers who represented the some of the marijuana dispensaries, and we notified some of them we were going to get them. We did those warrants in-house. At that time, we had 10 attorneys. I don't think the city attorney's office, I don't know what they have now, but I doubt it's that many. And we did the work in-house. We did not have the cost of outside counsel, which they have to have now because they're so tied up with the bankruptcy and they don't have the adequate staff to do it. Now, this part will surprise you. We made a decision, however, based on several factors. While the Supreme Court was considering its decision in the Riverside case, we had the Riverside case saying cities could regulate dispensaries, and we had a Northern California appellate case saying they could not. The Supreme Court took it. We worked closely with the Drug Enforcement Administration to close down some of the marijuana dispensaries that opened in the city, and a large number of them did, as I said, up to 33 to 37, because there was no enforcement going on while the Supreme Court was making its decision. After the November 2012 presidential election, our investigators, who had close ties in some cases to federal government, Bob Pepler was the former assistant director of Homeland Security and in charge of narcotics. We learned that after the November 2012 presidential elections, the federal government was not going to be assisting us any longer in enforcement. And that was a rumor we were informed of, and it turned out, of course, that was true. We realized at that time that we were not going to be able to continue to do what we had been doing for several reasons. The will of the people in the state had changed, will in terms of medical marijuana. There was no real way to prevent that change from being taken advantage of by medical marijuana retailers to sell to others. We also recognized that we were going to have to pay even for the investigators' time. We had made the decision, and of course we could not confer with the majority of the council because of the Brown Act, but a minority of the council pretty much seemed to be on board, that we were, after the November 2013 city elections, the recommendation was going to be made to recommend permitting 3 to 5 licensed retail medical marijuana clinics in the city of San Bernardino. They were going to be carefully zoned into areas away from residential communities. They would be predominantly in non-retail commercial areas and in industrial areas, possibly in areas where there were the big boxes. We were also going to require that conditional use permits be obtained by each of the licensed facilities. You've heard that the ABC enforces the monitoring of liquor stores. That is primarily true and totally true as to the alcohol they sell. However, cities can determine where liquor stores can go, and cities can revoke and suspend conditional use permits to close down liquor stores under certain circumstances. And working on that, a few years back, we passed the deemed approved ordinance, which allowed us to impose conditional use permits even on liquor stores that have been grandfathered in, that had been here in the city prior to the city imposing conditional use permits. We were going to charge a application fee of $10,000 to $15,000 per applicant. We estimated we would have about 40 to 50 applicants. You can do the math. The estimates today are you would have probably 100, maybe more. So you're looking at $10,000, which, by the way, is the application fee that Palm Springs charged, is $100,000. That would have more than paid for the city attorney investigators who only a portion of their work was dealing with the marijuana facilities. And those salaries, we had them part-time. They were all retired police officers, licensed to carry firearms, knew how to get search warrants and so forth. But we decided not to go the criminal route at all, the route that they did recently on Kendall, because of the problems you heard and the cost. $100,000 for just that one operation, I think Lieutenant Law had estimated. We closed all the medical marijuana facilities in the city, probably spent less than $15,000, $20,000, even the small amount of police time, because the police were only there and actively involved on the day of the actual inspections, and with fire and code. The city attorney investigators had been very successful in collecting the money. They collected over $1 million the first year we had ACPs. After I left office, I heard that someone questioned that by comparing it to what the code enforcement officers were collecting. You couldn't compare them because the code enforcement officers at that time gave 3, 4, 5 warnings before they issued an ACP. City attorney investigators did not do that. Moreover, they were retired cops. They were more aggressive. They knew the law very, very well. And they did. And we gave regular written reports to the council, which are in your files, that showed each city department and how much money they brought in. And the city attorney investigators always brought in the most because of the aggressiveness. A number of that funds were brought in based on the ACPs to the marijuana clinics. We also worked closely in our presentations to the hearing officer who upheld those full $1,000 fines. However, the $1,000 fines weren't what did it. It was our going back, when the 9 to 12 reopened, seizing it again, seizing their product again. It was a problem because the police department could not store large amounts of marijuana, and that's probably a problem today. And also the district attorney's office was advising them not to seize marijuana for their criminal investigations. But we weren't seizing it for the criminal investigations. We were seizing it as evidence in a civil proceeding where we had an administrative inspection warrant. And those did work very well. It would be a different situation today. You have no city attorney investigators. You can't handle it in-house. But I think that you should be aware that this city was almost certainly in 2014 going to allow 3 to 5 dispensaries in the city, because otherwise we were going to have the exact situation you have today, where you've got retail stores all over town and there's no effective continuous enforcement going on, and it's not possible with the bankruptcy and the reduced numbers of police, the increase in the crime, and what the city attorney's office is facing in terms of their staff. So while it can be done, it's expensive, but you have to really regulate the 3 to 5, or however number you allow, and to do that, if you're going to license them, you have to close down the other ones. You have to, because otherwise, why would anybody want to get a city license? But with a city license and the city inspections, the same as every other business. And by the way, I heard this bit about cocoa, because the smell, I mean, you know, we were already talking to people at the time who knew what was going on in the marijuana industry. We had a graduate of Cajon High School who's in the audience. I won't identify her, but who runs those types of places today. And she informs me that they use filters, and they have filtration systems, and the smell does not get out the way it is in many of the places today. And there are many other things they do in terms of cages they use inside. Two security guards armed at every location, licensed security guards. There are all kinds of things that cities can require and many cities do, and that this city, in my opinion, should. So it can be done. But for the public who's upset about it, and by the way, a lot of us aren't necessarily in favor of having these places in our city, but regardless of our personal feelings, you have to look at practicalities. As city officials, you have to do that. You have to study the problem. We studied it before the Supreme Court made their decision, and we experienced from the activities we did, and we were the only city I know that was successful in closing all of them down and keeping them closed for a period of time. As the recall election proceeded, and as the election for mayor and council members proceeded in November of 2013, there was a feeling on the council that they wanted to hold off on closing any more marijuana facilities. So the city attorney's office, as always, complied with the wishes of the city council. We were ready to go again. We had the warrants being drawn up. We had done the pre-inspections with our investigators, and we would have got the warrants, and we would have closed the rest of them down had the mayor and council remained, or at least the council remained the same. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Penman, for your contributions and your public comment. We respect them, and we thank you. I want to inform our audience here that we will continue the discussion. We're going to go ahead. If there's no objection, we'll continue the discussion to our June 14th meeting. Mr. Barrios has recommended that we could have alternative dates. I will, as chairman, consider that and notice the public if, in fact, we will be going that route. So I appreciate your attempt to compromise even further, Mr. Barrios. Thank you, sir. Also want to encourage public participation this Monday at 4 p.m. here in the council chambers. We will have a regularly held council meeting. There will be an item on the agenda, I believe it's on consent calendar, regarding marijuana polling. This LRC, last LRC session, we approved and ordered our city manager to bring that forward to the full council. So I'm sure there will be some discussion and dialogue regarding that issue. That will be a community polling and really a reflection of what we as elected officials are obligated to better understand our community's take on this. And so our city manager is moving forward on that particular subject and moving it to the council on Monday, May 16th at 4 p.m. And I'm sure there'll be debate and discussion on that. So look for it in the backup material. All right. I will also be suspending item number 2 today. Are there any issues regarding discussion of visible appearance of taxi cab decals? Is there anyone in the audience that wish to speak on that? Seeing none, I'd like to go ahead and move that item to our next LRC meeting. Are there any final closing comments regarding this? Mr. Lindbergh, we'll recognize you in just a moment, sir. I haven't forgotten you. Are there any other concerns, issues, questions, or wishes from the committee?
But I do need to dismiss myself at this time. I do got to get to work.
Thank you, sir.
And appreciate everybody's input today. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Lindbergh, you have 3 minutes. Chair will recognize Mr. Jay Lindbergh for items not on tonight's agenda. Thank you, sir, for your...
It was supposed to be for the marijuana thing.
Oh, well, okay. 3 minutes.
You've got some fundamental problems with marijuana prohibition. One of them is that we voted for legalization 20 years ago, so these people that are opening up these businesses believe they have a moral authority to do it because we legalized it. You've got to step back. You know, I hear about we've criminalized it. You know, we've banned it, the whole bit. But you've got a fundamental problem here because you're not asking the basic question. Is the banning of this warranted? What is the foundation for the banning of medical marijuana? Is it that it's dangerous? How dangerous is marijuana? Well, you know, as far as drivers go, Department of Transportation research. They said that marijuana users address their intoxication with slower speeds and greater concentrations. When they get in an accident, it's usually because a drunk ran them over. Healthcare risk. You go to the hospitals and ask, what are the healthcare risks associated with marijuana? That's where you would look. And you find out there are none. They don't have any money. There's no documented health care risks. So the bottom line is, when you look at why it's not working, your prohibition is not working, you're not asking the fundamental question. Is prohibition really warranted for medical marijuana? I mean, you look at alcohol. Do we have a moral authority to regulate marijuana at a greater degree than alcohol? You don't. You know, you've got 125,000 people getting killed a year from it. You've got all the traffic accidents. You've got, you know, all the drunk driving, the violence. You don't have any of that here. You don't have a fundamental foundation for this prohibition. It's really that simple, and that's why it's not working. You know, Mr. Pinman got up here and said, well, we were able to do it. You know, we were able to do it, but, you know, I was around back then. Some of y'all were, too. The city ended up bankrupt because we put all of our money in public safety, fire, and we didn't have anything else. And when we shut down the city, you know, when it went bankrupt, we were at the bottom for economic opportunities. We were at the bottom for education. We were at the bottom for pro-business. Every metric that we had to regulate, to say that this city should be successful, we were at the bottom nationwide. That's what, you know, that attitude that Mr. Pinman was talking about, that's the attitude that got us in the mess. Congratulations. We kept the medical marijuana clinics out here, but we bankrupted the city in the process. We didn't spend the money where it needed to go.
Mr. Lindbergh, your time is up. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Remember, there is no legitimate reason for this prohibition.
Thank you for your comments, sir.
No reason for it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this meeting will stand adjourned, and we will reconvene our LRC meeting on Tuesday, June 14th at 4 p.m. Thank you.
It's deeper than mine.